You are Locked On
Welcome
Pacers.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, the host of this wonderful podcast. And joining me on the other line, because he couldn't get enough of me for the second time this week, Tony East from Forbes in the Western Upcoming News. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm good. I just finished Home Alone 3, the Macaulay Culkin-less Home Alone, and it was fantastic, but I am excited to talk about some Pacers basketball and some seismic NBA news.
You're really in the dog days of coronavirus at this point. So we're going to talk about the Pacers' second preseason game and how it kind of compared to the first one, and just kind of give our thoughts on that game to start off this podcast. And then we're going to talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo's massive $228 million extension, I believe, and how that affects the Pacers. And then we've got an interesting segment to end the show that you'll find out when we get to it. But like I said, we're going to start with the preseason game. The Pacers go to Cleveland two times in a row, lose both times. This time, the final score of this game was 116-106. Pretty similar loss. The first one, they had a big lead early, and they brought in kind of this third, fourth unit, let's say, and things kind of dwindled away with that. I think the one big difference where I want to start is I thought Aaron Holiday was pretty bad in the first game and looked pretty good in this game.
Yeah, the scripts of these games were exactly the same. The actual Pacers rotation plays pretty good, shows how good they can be at their best, and then their C team is in at the end, and they give up 42 points in the fourth quarter on Saturday, and then 35 in the fourth quarter on Monday, and they lose both games. And it doesn't matter because it's preseason. But yes, Aaron Holiday is the place to start if you want to really analyze a player. I think he's the guy to get it, because this is like part of what makes Aaron Holiday's value to the Pacers recently is that he's been able to fit in well to a ton of lineups because of his skill set, right? So they swapped the starters. Miles was sick and didn't start. Does not seem like it's COVID. He was in the facility today but did not practice. Anyway, so Aaron starts with Justin alongside him as the other forward instead, and hits a bunch of threes and got to the rim a little bit better. Three assists this time, got the turnovers down, was second on the team with 16 points. Just basically all the stuff that wasn't happening well for him in the first game all ticked up a little bit in the second game and showed, you know, this, if he can get his consistency, that's the next thing of growth for him. But, you know, he continues to show, you know, throughout his career that when he's on, he is a really good player.
Yeah, he shows these flashes, right? He just – it's whether he can turn like into a consistency, but he consistently shows, oh, I can maybe even be a starter at some point if I could just, you know, do this every night or every, you know, consistently put up 15 points a night.
3 out of 4.
Yeah. I mean, he was 4 or 5 from three, which I think is, you know, that's kind of where he lives and dies most nights, right? If he's hitting that, what do we call it, 25-foot 3-point shot, basically, where he can, you know, just kind of pull up and drain that, then he's becomes, I mean, maybe the most lethal offensive threat on some nights. I mean, there were nights last season, I think, where he at times, especially in some couple fourth quarters, where he was like the go-to guy in offense because he was the guy who could beat the guy off the dribble or pull up and drain a three. I think it was nice to see him play a little better, because I think the other guy who I thought was pretty bad in the first game was also pretty bad in game two, and that was Vic. His shot's not falling. I don't know how else to put it.
Vic was bad in the first game, but I did think Vic was bad in the second game.
Well, in both games, he wasn't great. Let's put it that way. I think he was a little better in the first game because I think we hadn't seen him look at kind of the athletic in a while. Let's put it that way. But I think if you look at the final stat line and kind of take a step back, he played pretty bad in both games. Kind of couldn't hit a 3-point shot really in either one.
Yeah, it's for different reasons. So in the first game, he had, I think, 5 turnovers or 6 turnovers, a lot.
4 turnovers,
but, yes, close. But was like 2 for 6, right? So he didn't shoot as much, was more involved in the offense in a facilitator role. In the second game, he didn't have a single turnover, so good. You know, his big loose handle's been a big problem for him, but he was 2 for 11. He missed every 2-pointer he took in the game, which for Vic is just the weirdest thing ever. His defense has still been good, I think, in these two games, or at least, you know, better than it's been since the injury. But yeah, the offense still not, you know, still looking rusty. 2 for 11 is honestly kind of unacceptable for a guy like Oladipo. He did try to dunk on Andre Drummond. You know, he has, again, he still shows the pops of like, yeah, awesome, old Vic. And then 90% of the time, it's also just him settling for a pull-up jumper or, you know, not doing the plays that he used to be able to make. And it's really tough to have 9 points on 11 shots for Vic. So he hasn't had a game where he can't score or can't hit shots and is turning it over. Then he'll look really bad, but Yeah, another not awesome performance, even though he's I can't explain it. His defense was good, so I feel like he's a little better than Bubblevic, but still looking really rough on offense.
Yeah, and I think his biggest problem is going to continue to be if he doesn't go to the rim and find a way to be efficient around there or draw fouls, he's really not going to be the same player he was. Because that's what made him so good. I mean, I think, you know, he was always a streaky shooter at times, right? I mean, I think during his best season, he got up to like 40% at one point and fell back down and finished year about 38% from three. And he, you know, is an okay mid-range shooter, right? But it's just not going to be a shot. He's going to get it. They're not going to let him take a ton of them. If he takes a lot of them, they're probably going to, you know, start yelling at him because he's not playing in McMillan's offense anymore. But what made him so great was that he was so efficient around the rim, right? It was about drawing fouls or scoring shots at like an unbelievable rate considering his size. And that's the way he's going to have to, right? He unless he can make it up for with some like amazing shooting, but I don't think his shooting got any better. I mean, I think he has the same shot. I think there's a good chance we could see for a month where he could just can't miss a three or, you know, has a bunch of nights of like 4 or 5 or 5 or 7, you know, stuff like that from three and really, you know, elevates himself. Like I think that Boston game in March of last year where he sort of just got hot from three in the fourth quarter of that game and almost brought him back. Like that's, we'll see some of those games, but we won't see the consistent Vic where I think during his best year, he was putting up 20 point nights consistently. And I'm not sure we'll see that until he, you know, starts going to the rim and converting around there. And I don't know if he's ever going to have that back, but I think that's one of the tough things about a knee injury. And or I guess the quad tendon basically is that any kind of major injury is it, you're still kind of squeamish when you go for contact. And that's the hardest part of it.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, I don't want to overreact to two preseason games, but definitely some frightening early trends, even though I still think he's going to be better than last year this year. But
I would agree with that, too.
We will see. So other newsy stuff out of the game. Most guys, I would say, played pretty similar to their first game besides those two. Justin Holiday continues to look fantastic. Brogdon was good again. Sabonis was good again. Most of the bench guys were about the same. Two guys I want to highlight, though. One, I'm highlighting not for his play at all. Doug McDermott got hurt. He banged kneecaps with, I think it was Damian Dotson. Irrelevant who it was. And he left the game with a bruised knee, did not return, which is in the preseason the only thing you don't want to happen in the entire game. He said in practice today that he actually had bruised that knee prior to the preseason game in practice. And then when he bumped knees with Dotson, it actually was a re-aggravation of a bruise. And they just held him out of the rest of the game. But he practiced in full on Wednesday. So not something that will linger for him. Maybe they'll hold him out of the last preseason game because it doesn't matter. Just let the bruising go away. But he's fine. It was just frightening at the time. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that you want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, the whole point of preseason is not to get hurt. I mean, that's the one thing you don't want to get hurt.
Yeah, Chris Clemens towards the Achilles for the Rockets. That's terrible. You know, you don't want that kind of stuff. Jalen McHugh is the other guy. He has a guaranteed contract, and his waive and stretch date is long gone. So he'll at least start the season on the roster. He could, you know, he could be a trade deadline, send away with a second rounder or cash or something guy, candidate this year. But he made his debut in a Pacers uniform in the fourth quarter, played the nearly, and I made it play, maybe played the whole fourth quarter. He played a ton in the fourth quarter, took a ton of shots, just really tried to establish his role on the team, was 2 for 6 from the field, had a nice springy block, and showed some of the athleticism, but wasn't, you know, clearly was a little trigger happy. Him and Keelan Martin and Cassius Stanley were all very trigger happy in the fourth quarter, but it is what it is. That lineup is not very good, and LeCue, that was his debut, didn't, you know, kind of showed exactly what he was in the G League last year. We'll see if he can grow it all.
Yeah, the other shout-out I want to give to is Sabonis, who, new coach, same Sabonis.
Yep.
What, he had 18 and 13 tonight or something, mate, right? 18 and 9 tonight. I'm sorry.
And had got his turnovers down and still had awesome stats everywhere.
And 16 and I think he had 16 and 13 in the first preseason game. I mean, he, I don't know. I mean, you and I are in agreement that he probably is the Pacers' best player. I mean, I think there's a time you could see other guys have a better.
I want to see Warren play before I do anything like that. But yeah,
look, I think last year probably it was close because Warren obviously was healthier.
No, last year's bonus was better.
Yeah, but the bubble Warren might have passed.
Exactly.
That's the only thing. But I mean, I think night in, night out, Sabonis is usually their best player because he's most consistent. And Warren was still up there too. But like, I think it's, you know, you and I are in agreement that Sabonis is one of their best two players, let's say.
Yes.
Definitely. Other people would say are not that way, but I think it's pretty obvious that he's just such a polished offensive player that it's hard to, you know, to not give him credit each night for what he does and not to think that he's going to do this all season long, which is hopefully going to be the reason the Pacers are able to, you know, float above maybe the 7 seed at some point.
I have no other thoughts on this game. Preseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's preseason. We went about 10
They're
minutes.
They're not trying to win. Like, why are we breaking it down? You know what I mean? They're not trying to win.
Yeah, that's the best I can do for a meaningless game in early December.
two more things to say for me. One, Miles is sick. No idea if he'll play Friday. I'm sure Bjorken will have it, a status update come Thursday. So peep Twitter for those updates. Goga did practice Wednesday, and he needs to be getting these practice reps in. So hopefully he can go Friday as well. I thought he would go Monday, given what Bjorken said last Saturday. He did not. So hopefully we can see Goga. Miles, TBD. But again, same thing with McDermott. If he's even like on the fence, why put him out there? So I'm guessing we'll see Goga Friday. I don't know about Miles, but I'm done with this game now.
Yeah. All right. So let's do this. Let's take one quick break, and then we're going to talk about Giannis' extension and a bunch more of its after effects. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Bilko. We talked about Bilko for a long time now. Bilko is that wonderful 1.5 ounce pack that you can take with you that gives you an extra boost to get through your day, to break through that physical or mental wall. It comes in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, or chocolate mint. It's like a 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's all natural. It's better for the body. It's like drinking a Monster drink with a third of the caffeine for better results. Bilko combines energy gel with collagen protein. It's fast absorbing into your system and easy on your stomach. And right now, if you visit BiltGo.com, use promo code LOCKED, that's LOCKED, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BiltGo.com. Let's go. And we're also brought to you by our wonderful friend over at Built Bar, who's been a great sponsor of this podcast for the better part of the year now. They come in 18 amazing flavors. Tony and I have tried them all. We think they're pretty good. My favorite one, as always, is the peanut butter one. I'm a big peanut butter guy, but they also come in double chocolate, salted caramel, cookies and cream, all kinds of flavors. The bars are 100% covered in chocolate and soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for somebody trying to be healthy conscious, lose or maintain weight while indulging on a delicious treat. The bars come in are low calorie, low sugar, and high in protein. The one that I love, the peanut butter one, is 19 grams of protein and only 180 calories. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON. You get 20% off your next order. Use promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Giannis Antetokounmpo signed a massive extension, Tony, and I guess it's good for the league, everybody's saying at least.
No, I agree with everybody saying that, though. I mean, the balance of, like I get, I'm all about player empowerment, but the league to connect with fans, like fans don't connect to the NBA because they love, most fans don't connect to the NBA because they love basketball. They connect to the NBA because they love their team, right? So as much as I can root for player empowerment, in this situation where a player is truly on the fence, him staying in his small market team that drafted him and subsequently gave him a second deal, you know, the Supermax working and keeping a superstar on a team and connecting a team with the fans, right? Putting butts in seats and keeping rivalries live and all that kind of stuff. It's good for the league, right? It just is.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, any top 3 player staying beyond his rookie deal and then that first extension where he pretty much has to stay with the current team is good for a small market franchise in the long run, right? For the Pacers, for example, who maybe someday would like have to draft a superstar and get him to stay beyond, you know, the 7 years that he's kind of obligated to in some ways. Because if Giannis can win, there is something to like winning with the team that drafted you or winning the team you signed with early on, right? Like, we don't have to be the drafted, but maybe the team that developed you and whatnot, like somebody like in Vic's situation in a way. But on the other hand, Giannis in their division, and if he went out west, it would have been great for them because division would have been worse, conference would have been worse, and their chances of trying to get to the finals would have been better.
Yeah, so that's the most direct. If we're going to get to the Pacers, well, the ripple effect that I was kind of hoping we'd start with is where I was leading to was the small market thing, but we can do that direct one first, right?
That's fine. So Giannis, you pick, Bucks, man. You go either way.
You said this already, so we'll just do it. In the Central Division, right? So that's 4 games – well, in a normal season. I think it's still 4 games this year, but 4 games a year against that team. They got smacked by the Bucks 3 times last year. Or did they actually play them all 4? I think their 4th might have been after COVID.
Who knows? They got smacked every time they played. Let's put it that way.
They beat the Bucks with no Giannis. Yes. But, yeah, when Giannis played, the Bucks just absolutely destroyed the Pacers. He's so good. And now they have to play him 4 times a year still. He'll be a roadblock in the East should the Pacers ever get to the point where, you know, they're competing to move on to the playoffs and things like that. So, yeah, him staying is definitely a hurdle for not just the Pacers, but every team in the East who wants to move on in the playoffs and make a deep run towards the finals. That is definitely a factor. He will be, I think it's 4 more years after this for sure, maybe 5, that they have to deal with Giannis now. So that is the most direct hurdle, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the one hope is – the team, while I think the Drew Holiday trade was a good move, they're not the best managed team. Let's put it that way, right? I mean, letting Brogdon go for nothing was a historically bad move for when you have a superstar like Giannis.
Can I put a little asterisk next to your statement?
Yeah.
Their management is not given the correct orders to build the best team possible.
That's fair. That's fair.
Thus, the moves they make are not very good for winning a championship. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, screwing up the whole Bogdan thing is
that a was big bad. Deal.
Because he makes – I mean, I think he legitimately gives them, like, enough where all of a sudden that team is – where I think they're probably favorites to win the East or close to it. I mean, depending where the Nets shake out, because that could be the best team, especially with Kyrie and Durant at their peak. But now they're slightly worse, and it's going to be a slightly harder battle to win the East, where I think if they had Bogdan, I'm like, they're like even the favorite, even if the Nets are at their peak. But, I mean, them not re-signing Brogdon was big just because even if you – all injury concerns, not having that cap number as tradable was a big deal, and not trying to get some kind of – could they have gotten a trade exception in that deal?
They would have, yes.
Did they?
No. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but they
didn't. Depends how it was structured.
Yeah, that's weird, because then they could have used that for – well, no, you can't use that for –
They should have gotten one.
Okay. Well, whatever it is.
But they couldn't use it because they were miles over the cap last year.
So. Yeah. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is the team – well, I mean, you're not that badly run because you drafted Giannis, Middleton's another draft pick. Like, you built well in the draft, but they're at another level where the team – where you're at this point where you have to spend money because when to win a championship, you have to spend money. I mean, there are very few teams that have won a championship that haven't spent, $20 million north of the luxury tax line most years, right? The Cavs learned that the hard way, lost LeBron, got him back and spent a ton of money to win that one championship, right? I mean, the Raptors maybe didn't spend the most money ever, but they spent a lot of money still to put together that team between Lowry's $30 million and Kawhi's 20-something. So that's the issue, is if they're not going to spend the money to – now they have them. I mean, they are spending a lot of money, but they're not going to spend the amount of money it takes to, like, stay really good. That's the one hope, that maybe he gets angry and leaves, or they just end up not being as good because of a couple of things break their way the wrong way with injuries and whatnot.
Yeah. So for small market teams, the view is, finally the system isn't just punching them in the face, right? Like, you're not getting Anthony Davis for 7 years, and then he's just – shafting you on the way out. You know he's allowed to do that. They had
Paul George you on the way out.
So with AD, they had 7 years to build anything competent of success around. They did nothing, right? Like,
did nothing.
Okay, he's allowed to be empowered to leave. PG a little different, right? They made the conference finals.
Yeah, but we also both agree that team was garbage when the last year that
he was it was. There. They screwed it up every step of the way.
You've watched the SB Nation thing. Larry Bird just screwed that thing to.
Terrible.
By hell. Anyway.
So, but just to show the Supermax system finally working for once, all the other guys who got it basically either were former MVPs or just god-awful contracts for this.
Who are the other guys? It's Wall, Harden, Curry. Who else?
Westbrook,
that's right.
Dame Lillard. And I'm missing one.
Paul got close, but I don't think he got Supermax. I think he got just that, like, weird over 38 years old contract.
I can't remember the other one. There's been seven, but whatever.
Okay.
It's just been a weird thing so far, where, like, Boogie gets traded instead of getting a Butler gets traded. So, yeah, good for the small markets to see the system work and give them some hope that if they draft a guy, they could have him for his entire prime of his career, basically. I mean, he's still the man to trade, but – at this point, they can get huge value for him now. His contract is so long. So for a team like the Pacers, even though they don't draft really high, Giannis went, 15th? We figured out when I was wrong the other day.
Yeah.
They get the lucky Giannis pick themselves one day, they have the blueprint exists, right? If you get that guy that good, it can work.
Well, and it worked how it's supposed to work, right? The Supermax is designed for players who are so good that if they're on your team, they keep you – relevant or even in the top, let's say, four in the league, right? I mean, we can talk about Harden and whatnot, but pretty much with Harden on the Rockets, almost every year they were a conference finalist at least, right? There was a couple years, like last year, I don't know necessarily weren't, but like
2 years ago and the year before that, they were.
Yeah, it works for guys like Curry, who, his team was in the NBA finals for most of the time when he was healthy, right? It doesn't work when you pay the max to guys who maybe aren't quite there. Lillard is kind of in that weird range where, like, he probably worth it, but the team is so
absolutely worth it.
Yeah, but his team is so garbage, he can't carry him himself because he's
right.
But that's all. But that's the thing. This is the kind of thing you're supposed to entice them. Like, it's supposed to keep these kind of players. I mean, the Davis, you can make a case that Davis should too. But it's supposed to make the case that if you build a decent team around this guy and this guy's going to carry to the conference finals each year, he should want to stay, right? The Bucks have built a decent team, better than any of the Pelicans teams, right? I mean, just Milton alone is probably this would be the best player Davis had played with until he played with LeBron last year. So there's some of that. So it worked how it's supposed to work. I don't know if it's going to work in the future with other players and whatnot, but at least it worked this time.
So here's two very Pacer-centric ways that this Giannis extension impacts their team. One is extremely minor. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The Pacers have the Bucks 2021 second-round pick, and had they traded Giannis this year, that pick might have been mediocre. But they're not going to now. So that pick is going to suck. That is probably going to be the 60th pick in the draft.
Instead of, you know, a almost meaningless second-round pick, it's now a meaningless second-round pick.
Yeah, it is. It is going to be terrible, and that's all there. I mean, that's all there's to. It was going to be bad probably either way, but now it's going to be truly awful. The other one is, and this is kind of something I floated on two other shows with prior guests, but not with you yet. So here we go. I'm going to read you some names, okay? Giannis, LeBron, Paul George, Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, okay? All those guys have signed an extension this offseason. And Rudy Gobert might in the next couple days.
Okay, yeah, I know where you're
going. And you know exactly where I'm going with this, right? So that is a ton of really good players who are not going to be free agents next summer now, right? And so they are all signing with their incumbent team, which means cap space is not dried up from the other team still. So for a guy like Vic, if he is able to reestablish himself this year, all these extensions Giannis included, especially because Giannis was the target for a team like the Heat or the Mavs who might be interested in Depot, right? He could get up to like a top three or five free agent pretty easily now, honestly, especially given his history as an all-star. So
I mean, look how much Gordon Hayward was overpaid.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he's way worse than Hayward was before last year, but
yeah, but he's had a similar type of career threatening and injury. Hayward just came back at a better level, but if he puts the Hayward-esque numbers this year, that's probably not right. You know, the full, you know, max, but to get in the 30s from a team.
So Drew Holiday could also get an extension from the Bucks, and then you've got like Kawhi, and he'll probably opt out, and like Lowry and Gobert, but Gobert could get an extension too. Like that's it. You know, free agency could end up being kind of Vic because of all these extensions, which gives him all the more reason to bet on himself and not take an extension with the Pacers. So that's another Giannis thing, is I think that it means Vic is less likely to take an extension, and the Heat specifically, but also the Mavs, and I guess the Raptors a little bit, can no longer get Giannis, which means they have to spend their cap space on something else, and Vic might be a prize for those teams. So we'll
see. The one saving grace with the Heat, at least, well, Heat and Mavericks, is that they're well-run team, so I don't know if they're going to, like, be, you know, hankering to give out Vic a four-year, let's say, a $130 million contract just because they're smart teams and don't want to waste money. And two, the Heat, by re-signing Bam, have locked up a decent amount of their cap space. Now, they can waive a bunch of guys, but I'm not sure they can get to a high, like a full max number without getting rid of Hero, and I don't think they're going to get rid of Hero for Vic at this point.
Definitely not. No, not even, not a chance.
Yeah, I mean, this. Yeah, so the Mavs can do it, I think. But again, I mean, the thing, it really depends how Vic plays, right? If Vic comes out, and we've seen the prison, he doesn't look like he's going to be a superstar yet. Maybe he's just playing, you know, coy right now. Maybe he's just hiding out, and he's going to show up, you know, first game, put up 25 points, and we're going to be like, oh, Vic's back, right? But
I highly doubt it.
But right, it was probably going to happen is we're going to get a mixed bag of Vic. We'll have really good nights and some really bad nights. He'll hit free agency, and I wonder if a lot of these teams – are, you know, unless you're a stupid team might pay him, right? Like the Knicks or who else, you know, I'm bottom of the barrel. And then Hawks have a lot of cap space too, or do they use it all?
No, they used it all.
Rather, they use it all this year. They don't go in this year, right? So maybe a stupid team gives like a big contract, but I don't think they're have to compete with any of the top teams unless he has an amazing season. But then at that point, you might max him anyways because he might be worth it. So it's kind of the Pacers are in an okay position. If he wants to leave though, he's going to leave. And that's the only worry, right? If he just really wants out and plays really well, he's going to leave no matter what they do. So.
Right. We'll see. I just think that he has all the more reason to wait until next summer. And as he says, he can't control the rumors. So we'll get to deal with that all season now. Thanks, Giannis.
Yeah. Well, whatever. It works.
Let's talk about what you texted me earlier today.
Yeah. Let's take one more break and then we'll do this segment on how the Pacers are getting screwed in the Central Division. Okay. So, Tony, I believe starting in 2005, I want to say, is when the NBA switched to divisions, right?
I have no idea.
All right, I think 2005. I could be wrong. I'm not 100. I'm kind of. I went through Wikipedia.
And it's not really relevant to this discussion, but sure.
Yeah. So what we were talking about is I had this weird kind of epiphany, I guess you could call it. Basically, in the Pacers division, they are now probably – they've probably been the most screwed of any team in their division, right? So the four other teams in their division are the Pistons, Bucks, Cavs, and Bulls, right? Since about 1990, arguably the best player in the league has been in the Pacers division for all about like 3 years, right? The 3 years LeBron left for Miami, right? Because he leaves, and maybe it was in between Jordan final years and whatever in the beginning of LeBron. But, like, I'm not sure there's a conference that's had as many MVP teams, MVP players on as many different teams, right? Like, you go to the Lakers, right? They've had, like, four MVPs over so many years, so I'm sure that conference gets screwed. But you look at the Central Division, and then the one team who hasn't had an MVP won a championship and arguably had kind of a mini dynasty in the mid-2000s, right? So the Pacers basically consistently have to play the toughest teams and consistently – are the second, you know, they've been the second best team a lot of time. They've lost to the Pistons in the conference finals. They've lost to the Bulls in the conference finals. They've lost to the Heat in the conference finals. Like, and then they lost to the Cavs in that first round series, right? They've lost to, like, they've just consistently getting screwed here over and over again. And I'm assuming in this case the Bucks will probably win a championship in the next 5 years because Giannis is that good and the team is decent. But at some point they're going to be the only team in the division without a championship and, like, without having had an MVP level player.
So let's draw the timeline, right? 84, whatever. I think that's when MJ was drafted.
So 83, and the Pacers ironically had the second pick the year before and year after, I believe.
So the Jordan's in the division from mid 80s to 2000, I think.
98, right? 99.
So Pacers make the finals at the very end of that. They are growing and getting better that whole time, and finally make the finals at the end, but they can never get over the Jordan hump. They lose to him in the playoffs in 1998. Can't do it. They have the best player in the world in their division. They can't get out. Then they have a tiny little frame between Jordan and LeBron. 4 years, 3 years. I guess 4 years before LeBron was so good that he got them to the finals.
Yeah.
They had a four-year gap to finally be good enough to make it to the finals. And lo and behold, they built a good enough team. And then the brawl happens. And the Pistons, another team in their own division, builds this mini dynasty that you said and takes over that time frame.
And beats them in 04 in the conference
final. And beats them in 04 in the conference final. So far in the conference final. And then they have the brawl final, whatever. And then LeBron is just stomping them for years. Gets to the finals, I forget what year, 08, I think was the year he got.
07.
And then LeBron finally leaves the division. They're finally free from the clamps of Chicago, Detroit, and Cleveland being good. And the Bucks stink. And they make the conference finals twice. They finally have a chance at the finals, and they just can't beat the Heat. And now the Bucks have Giannis now. And LeBron came back to Cleveland for a little bit just to knock him out one more time.
So, twice, actually, right? They beat him twice in the playoffs, back-to-back years.
The timeline is just brutal. I mean, they can't. The only time they escaped it, they almost got to the finals, but still, like, lost LeBron in a different division. But just brutal how someone in the Central Division always seems to either be peaking or having a stud on the roster.
Yeah, it just – I think about this. Probably the only other division that has many MVPs across teams would be the West, which has the Suns, who had matched the MVP two times.
Pacific or whatever.
Pacific, yeah. Sorry, in the West, the Pacific Division. Warriors, because I've got Ed Curry, and Lakers, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, it's just a very Pacer thing, if that makes sense, right? They just, like, they're always like this. You know, they're probably the second best team in the division this year, right? They're always the second best team, right?
100%.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's no competition between Cavs and Pistons. Oh, my God. Yeah, there really is no competition right now. Like, it's just the amount of bad luck they've had, right? I mean, they basically – and it'll probably happen again, right, if they build another good team. They run into generational superstars every single time in the conference finals, right? Like it's kind of this weird thing where the Pacers were, you know, in the West in the 90s, they might have made a couple of NBA finals, right? Because,
yep.
I mean, the best team was, like, some of those years were, like, the Jazz or Barkley carrying his team by himself, basically, or those kind of team, right? I mean, they aren't as screwed as some other teams, right? I mean, they were lucky to be in the East for some of this time because it was weaker in terms of the top four. But I'm not sure they've had as many MVPs within like a three or four hour radius of this place, and not have one come here. It seems just like, it's just weird, right? I mean, they just had years where, like, I don't think they had a pick in the Giannis year or a top 15 pick, but they were close enough, I think, that year to, like, they could have tried to make a trade. Or, you know, the Jordan years, they were really, you know, they were terrible all those years. They had picks before and after Jordan each time. like in the previous years, they had second top three picks each of the other 2 years. And then LeBron obviously just kind of comes in and dominates. And I think that year they're pretty decent. But yeah, it's kind of just ironic, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, basically the only two times that a perennial MVP candidate was not in their division from mid-1980s until present day was 2000 to 2005, and that's when the Pistons were really good, and the Pacers were really good for a hot stretch of that. But just could not beat the Pistons, and B, we all know how that ended. And then 2010 to 20, when did Giannis actually become good? 2016-ish?
Yeah, so, but then LeBron came back in 2015.
Yeah, so 2010 to 2015, and that was the Heatles era, and they were really good and couldn't beat the Heatles. And now that's the Giannis timeline. Like, the gaps never end. So who's going to be the MVP that joins the Central Division when Giannis is departing the Bucks? Are the Bulls finally going to have someone awesome then or something?
I'm thinking in, like, 2022, 2023, the Pacers made the conference finals because they built this weird team in, like, a 28-year-old Sabonis. And, you know, they found somebody else, some random gem in the draft.
That season, the Bulls will have traded for Karl Anthony Towns and someone else.
Oh, or, like, I'm thinking, who's the number one guy? He's gonna be the number
one. Cade Cunningham.
Yeah, he goes because the Bulls are physically gonna suck. So let's say they pull him or the losing Giannis conference finals. I mean, Giannis is now in the division for probably 5 more seasons, if not longer. Yep. And I think, I mean, unless things go really bad, I assume Giannis will probably be a Buck for the next 15 years. I mean, or 15 years of his career, not more. You know what I mean? The next 5 or 10 years, and will be a peak player for 7 or 8 of those. And so it's just like, I don't know. It just sucks. I mean, that's all I can say to it. I mean, there's. The Pacers each time have to draw like this perfect straight to have any shot at winning, to even get in the conference finals. And each year something kind of screws them up, right? Whether it goes back to the 98 season where they should have won that game 7, just couldn't pull it out, or against LeBron years with Granger getting hurt, kind of screwed them up and whatnot. I mean, they're always on like kind of this like mini cusp, but never can get over the hump.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brutal. I never even thought about it until you texted it to me, and I was like, wow.
Well, I didn't really think about the Giannis re-signing. I'm like, man, there's been a lot of MVPs in, you know, cities that are, like, you know, within driving distance of Indianapolis. Like,
probably the only driving distance organizations, if we're being honest. Yeah, it was an interesting thought and interesting to look back on history. Hopefully, eventually, the tides turn, but we'll see. But in summary, good for the Bucks. I'm happy for the Bucks.
Yeah, I think it's good for the league, to be honest.
It is.
You know, I mean, you, player movement is fine, especially if the franchise is really bad. And you can make a case the Bucks maybe have not been great, but you kind of also think that, like, you want your stars to stay in their local market, especially the small market. So I think it's good overall. You got anything else?
No. Check out Locked On Bets. Locked On Podcast Network has a gambling show, 10 minutes every day, all on good gambling. BetOnline.ag, official betting sponsor of Locked On Podcast Network. We'll have all those lines. You got to go check out that show. I think it just started yesterday. And they already had some funky scoop about NCAA player eligibilities leading to a good line. And I think they're going to be right. So we'll see. Go check that out. And then tomorrow we're talking 76ers and finalizing the roster. So stick around for that as well.
Yeah, and as always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Tony at Teased NBA, me at PreMadam5. That is all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys tomorrow.